October 21st, Manly Hot Springs, talking to Chuck Dart.
Do you feel like telling a little bit more about when you were younger? You were going to say something about when you ran away from home and something about a sleep storm.
Oh, well, the sleet storms occurred every once in a while in Duluth with the cold winds coming across Lake Superior. There were two in my memory that were really severe in that the ice buildup was so great as to snap power lines and the whole area was blanketed with a very heavy crust of ice, so much so that we could put on our skates and skate all over town and into the woods and go downhill, and it was great as a kid. It wasn't slick glare ice, it was kind of rough ice, but nevertheless it wasn't so bad that you couldn't skate. Oh, the sleet storm derailed the passenger train also. It must have had to do with the switch.
What do you mean with the switch?
Switch in the tracks. The switch apparently didn't function, and the engine jumped the track. It went off the track right as it was coming into town. And I can remember skating down alongside the derailed train and hearing baby chicks in the baggage car. So it had to be along in March that the storm occurred. We were out of school for about a week, and that was great too, you know. And the incident running away from home was, I have a sister that's 10 years older than I, and my mother was in St. Paul at the time, and my younger brother and I shared a bedroom on the second floor of the house, which was just about mid in the middle of the house, and there was a porch under the adjoining bedroom that was the front porch to the house, and it was different in that it was inset into the house rather than a porch that protruded from the house. Just the steps were outside the line of the house. Anyway, my sister and her boyfriend, who were probably 17 or so in high school, were sitting on the steps there, and my young brother and I went to bed. But instead of, and it was in the summertime, but there it gets dark, you know, and instead of going to the bathroom, we just took a leak out the window. And of course, my sister and her boyfriend were sitting not too far from there, and we were unaware that they were there. But when her boyfriend left, which couldn't have been too much after that, she came up to the bedroom and said she was going to get us in the morning. And I got up early and I left home. And I stayed away all day. I went out and stayed with a fellow who was in my grade in school that lived about 3 miles from us. His place was out in the country, and we used to go by there when we would hitchhike out to a swimming hole in Midway River. Anyway, I stayed away until late that evening, which was unusual. I was probably 7 or 8 years old at the time. And I was definitely leaving home because I wasn't going to come back and face the wrath of my sister.
Did you pack up any of your things?
I don't recall. I think I just took off. But anyway, I came back that night and I got chewed out, and I may have gotten a licking, but I don't remember. It was no big deal, except that I did run away from home that one day.
Well, how did your parents reprimand you when you'd done something wrong?
Oh, my mother would give us a licking once in a while, some infraction. My father only gave me a spanking one time, and I can't remember, I may be blocking it out, what the reason that he spanked me. I just don't know. My mother threatened to spank us a lot more than she came through. And when my brother and I would be fighting, she'd usually in another room, but we were making enough noise so it attracted her attention. She'd call out to us to stop it, or she'd come in there and spank us, and she'd be sure to get the right one because she'd spank us both. But it wasn't often that she did.
And how serious were the spankings? Did you have threats of the belt, or was it?
No, it was just spanking on the bottom. It was no big deal. The one spanking, the last spanking that I got was over my smoking. And I think I was 13 years old. And I came home half sick from having smoked a cigar. And my mother was really mad because she had talked to us about smoking a number of times. And that time she took a shoe and she really whaled my hind end. And between being half sick and the spanking and not appreciating smoking that much anyway, I decided it's not worth it. And I never did smoke much after that. We used to smoke cigarettes that we would make out of string and paper towels. There was a dispenser in the depot, and I can remember still the stamped on the paper towel dispenser was "Rub Don't Blot." And that was the name of our cigarettes, Rub Don't Blot cigarettes.
How do you make these?
Oh, we'd mooch some string. My mother was a string saver. She'd, you know, stuff that came from the store, but a lot of it was tied up and it would be in a jar. We'd take the string and put it in the paper towel, roll it up. It'd be darn near as big as a cigar. And then just spit on the paper towel, and then that'd hold it together. And we also would get somebody to buy cigarettes for us. At that time, you could buy some cigarettes for 10 cents and some for 15 cents a pack. Camels and Lucky Strikes and Old Golds and that type of cigarette was 15 cents a pack, and that was really living high on the hog to get some of those. But there were some called Wings and 20 Grands and a few others that were a dime a pack. And we'd get some older kid to buy those for us. But we didn't have that much money in those days. A nickel was sometimes kind of hard to come by. And at that time, you could get a Babe Ruth candy bar that weighed a quarter of a pound. Also a Butterfinger for a nickel.
Quarter of a pound?
Right. That seems like a lot of candy for a nickel, huh? But that's what it was. This was Depression time. And it was a debate whether you're going to scrape together a couple of nickels and spend it on a package of Wings or getting a half a pound of candy. And as often as not, the candy won out. Also, soft drinks were a nickel. Coke, and there was Coca-Cola really didn't have a very big bottle in those days for a nickel. I don't remember, but I do remember that Pepsi came through with a 12-ounce bottle for a nickel. I think it was twice as big as Coke at the time. So that we had Pepsi, and there was another one called RC Cola. And I really didn't much care for cola that much, but it was such a good bargain that it was hard to pass by.
Well, how would you get your money?
Oh, we'd sell rhubarb to a few ladies in the neighborhood. We got 4 cents a pound for that, but you couldn't really sell all that much. You know, you could saturate the neighborhood in a short time. There was a real nice lady. I think of her in my memory as being an old woman, but anybody past 30 was old in those days. And I really don't know how old she was at the time. She was probably in her 50s. But we would go down and mooch from her, pick her some flowers, some wildflowers or something, and she'd always have a few pennies or some walnuts, some kind of candy to hand us, or some cookies. She was a pretty soft touch.
Was that rhubarb, wild rhubarb, or rhubarb that you grew?
No, it was rhubarb out of our garden that my parents had. I also sold Liberty magazines and Saturday Evening Post. They sold for a nickel a copy, and I got 1 1/4 cent for each one I sold. And I was a pretty good salesman as a little kid. More so than a lot of kids in the neighborhood. I would just get out there and go from door to door and knock on the door and try to sell these magazines. Oh, also Collier's, Liberty Collier's and the Saturday Evening Post. But you could only sell one at a time. That is one magazine, because they were in competition with one another, and the agents that handled them wouldn't let you sell any of the others.
Would the same agent handle all three?
No.
So, did you ever get money from your parents? What kinds of things did they give you money for?
I don't recall that. We didn't get a regular allowance, but we almost always got money to go to the Friday show. So, in a sense, I guess it was a regular allowance. We got a dime to go to the show. And sometimes a nickel for the candy. And we'd also go to the dump and scrounge aluminum and copper. There was a guy that we used to sell junk to. If I remember right, we got 3 cents a pound for copper and maybe 4 or 5 cents for aluminum, but I'm not too sure. And we didn't have much of a cash economy.
How did this situation in your family compare with other families around there?
Pretty much the same, I'm sure.
How about back when you're talking about getting spankings for things? Were the other kids fair about the same?
I think so, yeah. Well, all those kids got into things that we occasionally got spankings for.
But anyway, people weren't usually more strict than your parents or less strict.
It would be hard for me to say at this point, but I assume that they were pretty much the same. There were probably some that were more rigid with their kids and some that were more lenient, but I don't recall that this was a...
You don't remember wanting to trade your parents in, huh?
No.
Well, what about food that your parents got? Did they buy a lot of it?
Yeah, most of it was from the store. We did have a garden, and for a couple of years we had chickens, but that neither the garden nor the chickens were very significant in the total food budget, I'm sure.
Do you remember making a lot of trips to the store to pick up things, or did your parents buy in bulk?
No, it was going to the store almost daily. And I can remember my mother saying, go to the store and get a 15-cent soup bone. And you got a pretty big soup bone for that. And she would make vegetable soup, which was really good. I wish I knew how she did it, because she'd have barley and potatoes and carrots and rutabagas, I don't know what all, but it really tasted good. I've tried to make it, but I just can't duplicate the way she did it. She tried to teach us how to cook, but my young brother and I rebelled at that. She would say, it won't hurt you to learn. But we didn't want to do that kind of stuff.
Did you enjoy going to the store? Do you have any strong images of the store?
Yeah, I think I did. I was a pretty social kid and outgoing and talked a lot. And I enjoyed talking with people. It wasn't too far to the store. One was a block and a half from where we lived, and another one that we traded at was just about 3 blocks further. When I was a small kid, sometimes there was a candy store not far from that grocery store, another at the other end of the block. And to get to there, there was an abandoned hospital, which was about a three-story building. And there were a lot of spooky stories that I had heard as a little kid. And when I was a little kid, to get a nickel in the evening from my mother to go down to Wagner's and buy a candy bar for myself was great. But to have to pass by that hospital was scary for me. So I would be, and it was on a corner too. So you had to go by it on two streets. And I would run as fast as I could by that hospital. I don't know what I expected to come out of there, but of course it was dark, unlighted in this big old building. And it was just a scary place for me. Didn't bother me in the daytime, but at night.
Do you remember hearing about any people who were kind of scary or considered to be gypsies or kind of, you know, that women would go to and find out what's wrong with their daughter, and somebody would consult a Ouija board or something? Were there anything like that you remember hearing about?
No, not that I can recall. We lived in a pretty stable neighborhood in that there was very little moving around. There were men that they called boomers that worked on the railroad. They were seasonal. They'd show up in the spring and disappear in the fall, but there weren't that many of them. And they were more or less the same ones that came back anyway. And indeed, some of the local railroad men did this. They took off for the Southwest or Arkansas or someplace to work on railroads during the wintertime. Railroad men apparently are able to interchange their work quite a bit. Something like construction men.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever get to know any of those people?
Oh, yeah, right.
Are there any personalities that stand out?
There was one guy that was called Romeo. I don't know what his real name was, but he was a pretty heavy boozer. And the nickname Romeo was given in derision, I'm sure. There was a time when the local people voted to close down the liquor store and have a municipal-owned liquor store. And I can remember there was quite a bit of opposition by some people to that. I suppose they objected to the socialism part of it, and also felt that they were being dictated to. But Romeo was one that was vocal about this. And in this little town where everybody knew everybody, of course, Romeo said he would not buy from the municipal liquor store. But very shortly after the store was closed and the municipal store opened, I guess he must have felt the dire need for some booze. And to disguise himself, he put burnt cork on his face and went to the liquor store. Well, and of course, there was only one black in the community, and everybody and his brother knew who it was. It attracted attention rather than made him less visible.
He would burn cork was to make him look like he was black?
Right.
I never heard of that. Is that pretty common?
Well, I guess that's the way they used to do that. The black guy, and he was a janitor at the bank, and he was also a shoe shine man. God, I don't know whose shoes he shined. Certainly nobody in our family had that kind of money to squander on a shoe shine. This is a real nice guy. He was, us kids always liked talking with Tom. He was, I don't know what his full name was.
Were you aware of prejudice in the town towards him?
Not really. As far as I knew, there wasn't prejudice towards Tom. There were people that spoke about blacks in a derogatory way, you know, using, well, the word nigger was a common appellation. But in my own family, my father and my mother were very outspoken about treating everybody well, and that we were not to make derogatory remarks about other people because of their race or physical condition. I can remember my father talking to me about never hurting anybody's feelings about their mental condition. If there was somebody that was crazy, he said, you wouldn't poke fun at somebody that had a crippled body, and that you shouldn't poke fun at somebody that has a crippled mind. My dad was an elected judge, a municipal judge, for about 12 years there. And I think he was prejudiced. I was a small kid. I was probably about 13 or 14 when he was defeated. And I don't really know much about his courtroom situation. There was not very much of it to begin with. I do remember as a little kid going with him to the courthouse when he had some things to do. I was probably 5 or 6 years old, and the jail was adjacent to the courthouse. And I liked to go there because the fire engines were, there were two fire engines there as well, the same building. And I was in awe of those big, shiny red fire engines. And it was a volunteer department. When a fire occurred, people would call to the central operator, and she would she'd call the railroad, some department in the railroad, and they'd blow a whistle, a steam whistle. And there was a signal, I forgot now what the 3 long blasts was for the east side of town and maybe 3 short for the west side, something like that. But anyway, I had the run of the courtroom, or the courthouse, and that firehouse, and the jail. When those few times that I went there with my dad, while he was doing things in the courtroom with paperwork. And on one occasion, I was at the jail. And if I remember right, there were three cells. And there was nobody there. I mean, there were no prisoners. There was a one-man police department. But he had the title of chief of police, although he was the only one. And his name was John Graham. He was a big man and a little bit overweight, but an impressive man. And he was friendly with me. But on one occasion, when I was running in and out of those cells, he closed the door on me. And I can remember the panic-stricken feeling of being locked up. And of course, I don't remember now what he told me, but he told me that I was going to be there for a while. He was kind of giving me the business. But anyway, it impressed me enough that I knew I never wanted to be behind bars.
Well, you said your dad was a judge, municipal judge for 12 years?
Yes.
Before he got defeated, what was it, by election?
Yeah, it was not a post where you had to have any qualifications as far as studying the law or anything. It was a position of limited jurisdiction. I don't remember what kind of cases, probably traffic violations and drunk things and game violations and really a very minor thing. But he could also marry people. I'm sure he couldn't divorce them. But I'm sure he could marry them.
So he married a lot of people.
Not really. I would doubt that he performed more than a half a dozen ceremonies, because in those times there was a heavy emphasis on church weddings.
Was he a justice of the peace?
No, he was called a municipal judge. I really don't know what the distinction is.
You mentioned a little bit about drinking in a liquor store being changed over to municipal liquor. What did you see growing up as far as drinking?
Oh, there were some drunks in the neighborhood that we would see and we would follow. You know, that was what drunks were sometimes generous, give you a nickel or quarter or something if you were. So, and sometimes we would follow behind them and taunt them. But it wasn't often that we saw a man that was obviously drunk. When I was a small kid, it was still prohibition. And I can remember the election of 1932 when Roosevelt got in the first time, and there was at the same time the repeal of the, what was it, the 19th Amendment or 18th Amendment. That election coincided with the election of Roosevelt, if I remember right. And I can remember handing out flyers as a little kid. I would have been 10 years old because I was born in 22. For Roosevelt. My father was active in politics and union affairs. So there was some of that spinoff with me.
What do you recall about union affairs growing up?
Well, He was the president of the local of the Brotherhood Railroad Trainmen, which was for the conductors and brakemen. There was, come on in. Well, the railroad union started more as a burial society. to take care of the workers that were killed on the job, rather than a struggle to improve working conditions and better wages. That's how the Brotherhood of Railroad Trainmen started. And in fact, the conditions, the working conditions were such that when they were hiring men, they would have them hold up their hands to see who had all their fingers, because it was so common for men to lose fingers in coupling cars together that a man with missing fingers, they knew had experience, and those were the people that they hired. By the time I came along, the union was well entrenched and recognized, and the railroad was completely unionized. But my father was also the what was called the legislative representative in the state legislature, which is to say he was a lobbyist. And he was a lobbyist for 30 years or so. He was also the president of the local for a very long time. What the hell kind of an airplane is that? My father was looks like a Lance. Retractable gear. But it's not a Lance. Anyway, my father was active in politics in the Farmer Labor Party, which was a progressive party in Minnesota. The other major party at the time was the Republican Party. The Democratic Party was not all that strong in Minnesota. In the upper Midwest, there was a pretty strong movement of populism. In Wisconsin, it was the Progressive Party. They called the Progressive Party. And the La Follette family was the outstanding leader in the Progressive Party. And in Minnesota, when I was a little kid, the governor was Farmer Labor, Floyd Olson, and he died in office and was succeeded by a man named Benson. I believe it was Henry Benson, but I don't recall. Anyway, my father was appointed clerk of the public domain under Benson's regime, which was his post was similar to the department or the Secretary of Interior, in that he had the state lands under his stewardship, much as the Secretary of Interior has federal lands. But I do not recall any particular thing that he did while he was clerk of public domain. He was in St. Paul during the legislative sessions, which weren't all that long, as I recall, in those days. Maybe 2 or 3 months, certainly not 6 months.
Like your father's interest in politics rubbed off on you?
Oh, not nearly as much as his. But my dad was active in politics, and so was my mother. My mother was a Republican, and it was They would argue about the merits of different men in the two different parties, and also the issues involved. My mother was more conservative, and she was frequently a delegate to a Republican convention, and my father would be a delegate to the Farmer Labor Convention. So we got it at home quite a bit.
Well, did this political activity interfere with his job?
Not at all. I say that, but I can't imagine that it interfered with his job.
Well, what is your own feelings about politics as far as it being important to be involved?
Well, I think politics is important to all of us in that it has a tremendous influence on so many aspects of our life. There isn't much that isn't affected by politics. And indeed, many of the things that we think of as being removed from politics, in my mind, are very political. Anytime there's taxation in expenditures of public funds is certainly a political thing. It depends upon how you want to define politics. If you want to limit it to a very narrow partisan politics, then there is less in human concerns that are political, but in terms of group action that affects all of us, there is little that isn't political.
Can you think of any particular instances or particular things that you could mention that would elaborate on that? I think that's a really important idea.
Well, most recently, now we tend to think of religious organizations as being non-political, which in fact they are very political. The election of the two popes is a fine example of that even within the realm of the various churches, it's very political indeed. Here we have a situation where there are conservatives and people that are less conservative that are pulling and throwing their weight for one candidate or another. If God is indeed working there, he's working through a political system. The same with the matter of the women priests in the Episcopalian church or the Episcopal church. Most recently, or 2 or 3 years ago, the convention had a stiff fight on. In fact, the past several conventions, they've had a lot of political fighting on whether or not that women should be admitted to the priesthood. And it would seem that this would be a spiritual or religious question, which it is, but it's settled politically. I mean, there was no commandment from God about it. It was a group of men and women that voted. And in fact, some of those that were sour about the outcome have split off. And this happens a lot in politics. People that are unified on certain issues can become very divided on other issues, and indeed will break away. And this is the reason that we have several parties. We've got it going.